Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, you want to push the button? You do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I put on Prince's Purple Rain as my record in the hatch this week.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I put on Graceland by Paul Simon in the hatch this week.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I'm in the hatch chilling with my homies, I'm going to put on Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. Something real smooth. And let me tell you why. It's because that chair that's in the hatch looks like a jazz chair. Looks like you could sit in that chair and listen to some jazz.
The hatch does kind of look like a jazz hatch.
It's like a classic, you know, well, I guess 1960s, 70s leather chair. It's great. It's great stuff.
Nice little jazz hatch. We are The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast, and we are up to Season 2, Episode 11, The Hunting Party in the television show Lost. If this is your first time joining us, you should know we split the podcast into two sections. One is called The Calm, and it comes up first, and that's where we only talk about episodes of Lost we have already watched as part of this rewatch. In case this is your first time going through the show, welcome to Season 2. If you have watched the rest of Lost or just don't care about spoilers and are aware there are six full seasons of Lost, you will like the second half of our podcast, The Storm, where we take any sort of knowledge that we can't talk about in The Calm because it's full of spoilers. It's The Storm of Spoilers. Hey, that's what we used to be called. If you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, you could support us, the show, and get some bonus content for it. You get access to our Slack at the lowest possible level. At the highest level, you can get a whole bunch of bonus podcasts and some weird posts from your three intrepid hosts.
You get to impose your will upon us once a month with Choose Your Own Storm, which just happened and was about The Witcher.
Indeed. And now, you know, I have a Witcher video game I'm going to talk about in another bonus episode because I got pulled in The Witcher thanks to you guys. Those sorts of influences you could have at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. Joanna, there's also ways that people who aren't, you know, donating to the podcast get in touch with us. And those are reviews, emails, our website, Twitter. What are those ways for people?
Yeah, first of all, if you don't already know, you can email us anything you want to, but hopefully it's nice. host@stormpodcast.com. You can go to our website, stormpodcast.com. You might have noticed that the episode this week is one day late. You would have already known that if you've gone to stormpodcast.com. Look at our calendar there. This is, you know, this is a Thursday release week. That is what's going on over here. And you can also follow us on Twitter @StormPodcast, where we have fun, like, you know, polls and memes and alerts about bonus episodes and all that sort of stuff. So those are some ways to reach us. So yeah, we've got an email. We've got some spoiler emails that I'm going to shoot over into the Storm section this week, but we've got one non-spoiler email. And then we also have a review. And guys, guess what? The review calls for an accent.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's one I'm even willing to do. So this email, I'm going to start with the accent, review. This is from way back in December, but I just got it because we're slow on some of our international, review gathering sometimes. So this one comes from Dublin, Ireland. Oh, no.
Oh, I feel like I'm there.
All right. I'm going to turn down my microphone so I don't interrupt anyone.
Yeah, so you don't mock me too loudly while I'm trying to do this. All right. So if you don't know, guys, if you write in a review and you are not from these here United States, or even if you are, and you would like your review to be read in the accent of your origin, your state of origin or your country of origin, I will do that. My guarantee to you is that that accent will be offensive and you will be upset that you asked me to do it, but I will do it. So that's the deal. If you want to send it, rate us on iTunes and say, Southern accent, please, or what have you. Neil will make fun of me because he's actually from the South. Okay. Well, he's not. Anyway, so this is from Dublin, Ireland. And I want to get this out of the way. The username is Your Last Serving Daughter, 5 stars, greetings from Dublin. And she writes, okay, I'm mostly, God, that was so bad. All right. I'm mostly writing this review to hear you guys do some terrible Irish accents / try to pronounce my name right. But I also want to let you know how wonderful I'm finding this podcast. I started watching Lost when I was 12 years old. I remember getting up at 6 a.m. to watch the finale before I went to school hours after it aired in the States. I have loved it ever since and even have a Lost tattoo. On my arm. I'm also a huge fan of seasons 4 and 5, and I'm looking forward to you guys giving it the rehabilitation those seasons deserve. I rewatched Lost with my fiance last year, and I've loved getting to enjoy / ugly cry at the leftovers and Watchmen with him. Go, Damon. Keep up the great work. All right. And now this is the part where this reviewer wants me to try to pronounce her name correctly. But lucky for her, I saw the movie Brooklyn. So I know her name, even though it's spelled E-I-L-I-S. It's pronounced Eilish. Eilish from Dublin, Ireland. So, there you go. That's a review that I read.
All right. That was good.
In an accent, from somewhere.
It's an accent that sounded Irish most of the time.
Sometimes.
All right. Yeah, it was Irish-ish.
This email's from Chris. It's a little long, but I think it's worth reading, so we're going to read it, and it is about something that we keep kind of coming back to, which is Charlie. what a great episode this week, Charlie. All right, so Charlie's addiction storyline from Chris. Chris says, hey, Storm Team, I sure enjoyed your trip through Star Wars Land, but I'm also glad you're back in the jungle of mystery. I loved your podcast on the 23rd Psalm, and it gave me a good opportunity to write to you about something I've been thinking about for a while. To set this up, I have to get personal. I'm in recovery from addiction. Although I have watched Lost all the way through at least 3 times in the past, this is my first time rewatching it since getting sober nearly 4 years ago. Congratulations, Chris. Given that the show has a lot of stories and themes involving addiction, recovering, and redemption, I am watching it this time with those things top of mind. Being in recovering has only deepened the experience of watching one of my favorite shows, giving me new appreciation for certain characters' struggles. One thing I've noticed is my feelings about Charlie have changed. When the show originally aired, I liked him because Dominic Monaghan is great. But on subsequent watches, his repetitive addiction storyline became tedious and his behavior problematic. As you discuss in the podcast, with hindsight, it is easy to diagnose the problems with Charlie as a character. Even the writers have acknowledged they burned through his backstory too quickly and struggled to know what to do with him besides more heroin addict stuff. This is echoed in your discussions, and I can understand your feelings. But because of the people I've met in recovery, including some who have struggled with heroin, I now appreciate Charlie's story and his troubling choices more than ever before. Yes, it can be maddening to see him return to heroin after seemingly kick it in the first half of season one. It's also upsetting to see him do some of the crazy things he does along the way, but I also think this is sadly very realistic, and the writers may have gotten Charlie's arc more right than wrong in spite of themselves. I'm definitely no expert on heroin. My drug of choice was vodka, but I've been in the recovery long enough to watch people with various addictions relapse after a month, 6 months, a year, even 20 years or more. Some of the kindest, most loving people do terrible things, hide shameful secrets, lie to the faces of the people they love when their addiction takes over. Not an earth-shattering revelation, I realize, but relapses happen because addiction is more than the physical dependency. It can also be a mental illness that manifests as a coping mechanism to numb uncomfortable feelings related to past trauma, social anxiety, feels of inadequacy, or other emotional issues. When that crutch is taken away, the emotional dependency needs to be addressed, and that can last months or years beyond the physical withdrawal. Charlie may have gone through heroin withdrawal early in the season, but he isn't really working a program to deal with his underlying issues. That doesn't have to be a 12-step program, but therapy or some kind of work on himself would likely be the best way to prevent a relapse. Removing a source of heroin, that one bag he had left in the plane, forced him to go cold turkey, but those in early recovery who quit in this way often find it hard to stay on track when they have easy access to their drug of choice because they haven't found a healthy replacement for their coping method. It's like a stint in rehab with no follow-up plan. Charlie is actually doing pretty well by the time he comes across the Virgin Mary statues packed with heroin. I could write several more paragraphs about little ways he's instinctively working a version of recovery himself, such as building the golf course with Hurley, focusing on Claire, or being receptive to Saeed's advice after killing Ethan. But he's still very much in early recovering, having only been off heroin, the queen mother of addicted drugs, for less than 2 months, when a huge stash of it practically falls into his lap. Not to mention he's undoubtedly suffering from PTSD, which also requires work to recover from. The idea that he might relapse in that scenario is probably the most plausible outcome. I won't say more to avoid spoilers, but the bottom line is that I now find his arc so much more believable and sympathetic than I ever did before. And then Chris says some nice things about me in our iTunes review, so thank you for that, Chris, but I'm not going to read it. So that is Chris's email, which I think is a tremendous email. And I both agree with Chris, and I think Chris even in here acknowledges that, like, yeah, I see sort of like... it's realistic and I agree. And then also it's a problem narratively. Both of those things can be true. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's, Chris's observations are excellent about the recovery process. But also the show does bring the heroine back. Like it's not like Charlie is somewhere where he can, you know, would have had access to it otherwise, but they chose narratively to keep bringing back the source of his thing, which I think we're totally reasonable in blaming and being mad at the show for that.
Well, it's interesting because, and I can see how on the face that would be like, that would seem like a great idea in the writer's room, right? You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Okay, this island forces you to confront your demons over and over and over again, right? That's not a spoiler. That just seems to be what we've seen so far. And, you know, including in this episode. And so they're like, okay, here's the heroin addict. He thinks he's finally kicked it. He thinks he's found the, like, a paradise version where, like, he can't even possibly relapse because, you know, there's no available source. And then, you know, a plane full of it lands in his lap. And so I can see how, like, island wise, that is like a tidy little, like, fuck you to Charlie. Fuck you. Deal with this, Charlie. But narratively, once again, maybe there was a way to do it, and they just didn't figure out a way to do it, at least that works for me. Seems like it's working for Chris at this time in his life.
I mean, I think if they would have dug into more what Chris is talking about, of like Charlie having to like create his own program, and I think the show's shortcoming is not like giving a nod to Charlie's storyline, but when it does enter Charlie's storyline, it seems like it enters it from the broadest way possible. Like, I would love to see like Charlie's addiction treated more seriously to the point that it becomes like one of the most serious things on the island. But we are talking about a storyline that's rooted in him kicking heroin basically over an episode gap, which is like 12 hours in real time. So the show, you know, is a show about island mystery that was made in the early 2000s, and it's trying to do a lot of things, but I think much like some of the stuff with Saeed and the Ana Lucia stuff just missed the mark with the best intentions.
Something I will say is that Chris's email really helps me appreciate some of the Claire stuff a bit more, because like I'm so frustrated with Charlie and Claire, but if like Claire and Aaron as a project, and no spoiler, but we will see Charlie take on another project that makes this sort of way in which he's latching to people even more apparent. I think it's the most apparent version of it is yet to come on the show. You know, Charlie latching to certain things. Now in this episode, the reason I say this isn't a good episode for Charlie is that he's a really bad friend in this episode. In his like one shot of being a good friend to Hurley, he blows it. But in terms of him latching, I don't know. It's interesting for me to think of it that way, as like a transference. And that goes really well with that whole, Claire dressed as the Virgin Mary in last week's episode. You know what I mean? Like, that's his addiction, to a certain degree as well, or the way in which he is like trailed around behind John or, et cetera. So, I really appreciate that email from Chris and that sort of getting personal. I really love it when listeners trust us with that information. Neil, did you have anything else you wanted to say about it?
No, that's a great email. Yeah. It's always great to explore how our, reactions to things can change over the course of, you know, life events and just life in general. It's really fascinating and I appreciate Chris, sharing it with us. It's great.
So that's it. That's all of our, stuff from y'all this week. Please do, leave us a review on iTunes. We super appreciate it and send us emails with your thoughts, especially even when you disagree with us. And especially if you disagree with us in a very long, eloquent fashion, the way that Chris did. We'll have a few more of your emails in our storm section this week.
Excellent. Let's, go to another Sad Jack Runs Into the Jungle episode this week on Lost. Neo, what happened?
Oh, let's talk about The Hunting Party, episode 11 of season 2. This episode was directed by Stephen Williams, who you'll know from, both having directed other episodes and being on this podcast. It is written by Elizabeth Sarnoff and Christina M. Kim. It aired on January 18th, 2006. It takes place on days 51 and 52 on the island. In flashbacks, we watch as Jack is asked to perform a second miracle by a man from Italy who clearly doesn't know how miracles are supposed to work. Later, after the surgery fails and the man dies, Jack kisses the man's daughter, goes home to admit it to his wife, who you'll remember as Sarah, recipient of Jack's previous miracle work, and gets straight up dumped in a bachelor-style twist. Because, you see, Jack will always need something to fix, and it's not going to be this marriage. On the island, Jack shows up to the hatch to find that Michael has assaulted Locke and is leaving promptly with some guns. Jack forms a hunting party that, after much consternation, does not include Kate. This is important to remember for later. Jack and Locke have a philosophical discussion about personal liberty and how far they should go in their attempt to bring Michael back. Before they can come to a firm resolution, the others show up for a big introduction and then a classic Kate for the guns trade. Everyone leaves unhappy. While on Hatch of Mystery Duty, Harley and Charlie listen to music, talk about girls, you know, dude stuff, until Saeed shows up and makes it weird. Back at the beach, Sun is begins putting her foot down, ultimately teaching Jin a powerful lesson about creating equality in the power dynamics of a relationship. It's a lovely little thing that happens. The episode ends with the hunting party returning to camp, followed by Jack asking Ana Lucia how long it would take to, quote, train an army. And I guess there's nothing to worry about there. this week's fun fact, is that when you see Kate typing the numbers into the computer, you only really hear about 6 to 8 clicks, and, math nerds, Yang gangers, if you will, would know that in order to type 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42 into a computer, it would take 16 clicks. So that's, you know, conspiracy. Sound design, not great. On this episode.
She just types hi, Walt.
Yeah, maybe she's just talking to Walt.
BRB.
speaking of Walt, this week's opening calm question, the discussion obviously between John and Jack is, should we even be following Michael at all, or should we just let him go do his thing? Where would you be on that side of the argument? I feel like personally, I would, out of sheer laziness of not wanting to trounce the jungle, be like, you know what? I'm good. Michael will come back when he's ready. We have to let him live his life. Joanna, where would you fall on this one?
Yeah, first of all, Kate obviously would be typing a horse ? Into the
computer. Horse.
Secondly, I'm team Ana Lucia, where Ana Lucia's like, and this is the second time he's gone after his kid. Jack's like, yeah. She's like, well, nothing you can do about that. And I'm like, yeah, I agree. Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that. Let him go.
Finally, something relatable about Ana Lucia.
That and like, never mind. Yeah, good stuff from AL in this episode. I also like the part where he's like, I heard you killed one of them. And she's like, what do you mean by that? Do you mean your pal Shannon or someone else?
Did someone tell you about Shannon?
You mean Shannon, that girl you saved, technically sun saved with, Vicks Vapo Rub? No? Okay. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, sorry.
You're going to need to be more specific about who I killed.
That was a tangent. I would let Michael go. What would you do, Dave?
I'm going to be the Jack about it because of that thing that
I feel
Jack
like you'd
says.
Be too curious not to go after Michael.
Well, right, because it's that thing that Jack says to Locke, which is like, if we don't catch up with Michael, we were never going to see him again. And that rings is really true to me in day 50 on the island when, like, crazy stuff's happening. You could just never see Michael again. And then what are you going to do? Like, could you imagine, like, coming across Waltz, like, years later and being like, what happened to my dad? He's like, well, he said he was going after you. We thought he knew best.
We tried to find your dad for a couple of hours, and then we gave up.
If we did it my way, we would have tried to find his dad for a couple of hours. If we did it your guys' way, we would have not even tried. So I'm going to say, give it a try. And then you get to learn where the line is, which is important information to eventually have. Maybe not go all the way to build an army. That seems a little rash, but I think, you know, we got some good important information.
Yeah. Jack as an escalating force in some sort of war scenario is it's actually kind of a different weird thing for Jack.
It is. This week's flashback is very interesting in that while watching it, it feels like it's purposefully woven in artfully. But now hearing you describe it completely separately from the events on the island, I'm wondering, is there like a thrust besides Jack always needs to fix something that we're holding to the flashback intercutting in the middle of this?
It's almost like it's like Jack can't let things go.
I have
so now this is like a thing that Jack won't be able to let go. But it's a weird, it's counter to a lot of the stuff that he's done so far.
I think it's a really tenuous connection. Cause like, I like the off island stuff, not really like the whole Bassani sort of thing, but I like the whole, like, Sarah's like, oh, you don't quit me. I quit you. Buddy.
Plot twist.
Mom was here to help me back. Boom.
You got one kiss. I've been cheating on you for months.
Yeah. I really like that from Sarah.
Whose pregnancy test was it? You think about that. Yeah. I'll never see you again.
Good luck sleeping, buddy.
Thanks for miraculously fixing my spine, by the way.
Actually, my favorite thing of the Jack off island stuff is you know how like in the first episodes, or in White Rabbit it must have been, so one of the first episodes of season one, Christian Shepherd tells Jack like, you just don't have what it takes, right? Doesn't he say that to him? Like,
mm-hmm.
you just mm-hmm. don't.
When he's a kid.
Yeah. You just don't got it, kid. Whatever it is, you don't got it. And I feel like he says a similar thing to him in this episode. He's like, oh, yeah, some slippery motherfuckers get to cheat, but you, my friend, you don't got it. You ain't got what it takes.
It's not for you.
You just don't have what it takes across so many platforms, my friend. But yeah, I feel like the connection, because like, the implication, right, is that Sawyer is out there to get revenge for being shot. And Locke is out there, I don't know, cause he loves traipsing around.
Cause it's another fun island mystery.
Yeah, mystery, jungle mystery. And then they're like, why are you out here, Jack? And I'm like, why are you out here, Jack? Like, why?
Well, even if you want to simply out there because he let Michael,
he feels responsible.
For sure.
But he is very quick to be like, we shouldn't tell Michael what he can and can't do. Really obvious there, Locke, but, you know, only if you've seen the flashback.
No. Who are we to tell anyone what they can or cannot do? And I was like, that's not the famous Lost quote, Locke. You got it wrong. How do you feel about this adventure being two Jacks and a James going to the forest? Someone pointed out, we'll talk about this a little bit more in the storm, but someone pointed out that, two Johns and a James. Someone pointed out in the storm, we'll talk about this more, but that this is the first time on the show that Locke and Jack and Sawyer have all been ish on the same team. Ish.
Mm.
I mean, they don't get along. They don't play very well with each other. But they do ostensibly, all three of them have the same purpose, to find Michael, right? So.
Oh, yeah. Locke pulls out the name thing, which really kind of, I guess, hammers that home. because you think that would have been brought up earlier. They're like, back in the flight manifest. And I'm like, ooh, season one reference. I remember that happening. So we have, yeah, all the J's.
Yeah. Team J. And you can see why Kate wanted to go along, because things are getting, now that Sawyer's gangrene is healing, things are getting a little warm.
I know.
Between those two. And, you know, why not involve Jack too?
I know people get mad at me, when I get mad at Jack, but I rewatched the episode. Some people do. Some people don't like Jack, but like I rewatched the episode twice. And I don't think this is my ovaries talking. I cannot figure out a really good reason why Jack was able to tell Kate to stay behind, or why Kate listened, or why Sawyer didn't on this occasion, where he has on other occasions been like, she gets to come. And the only reason I can see that that happened was so that she could be bait, hostage later. But
I believe the term is damsel, Joanne.
Yeah, she's, thank you for mansplaining.
She has to get traded for guns later.
Yeah, like I
it was almost as good as the time you said Jack off.
It bugs me that that is a thing that happens in the episode. Cause it's just like, there's no good reason. She lists all of her qualifications. He has no rebuttal. And I guess the reason he's mad is that she kissed him and now she's flirting with Sawyer sometimes. Is that why?
It feels like particularly like petty in a weird way, but also it's like, you could use other characters for that. Like that could have been Charlie. I mean, it could have, because, you know, Charlie has trust issues, not just
And you could also be like, yeah, you shot the last guy we went after, right. So maybe Charlie should stay back.
It could also be, you know, they could have used Saeed in that role, where Jack is like, no, I need you to stay here and do this, but Saeed's like not super convinced or something. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Using Kate just makes it a damsel in distress situation at the end, which... I guess, no.
And then she just like,
not going there.
And then she just like apologizes. Like, and yeah, like true. She gets caught, blah, blah. But like, honestly, part of me is like, how did Kate get caught? You know, I don't know, but I know anyone could get caught by the other. So like Kate getting caught, sure. Fine. But like, then she just has to apologize.
Did you see how many torches they had?
Light them up.
So many torches.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, this is part of the show where we're starting to get a better feel for the love triangle that the show has been setting up between Kate and Sawyer and Jack. And I think it's, you know, like they may have thought it was interesting in the writer's room to be like, all right, cool. So we're going to get this situation where Kate's going to be the captive and then Sawyer and Jack are going to have to be there. And to add on to it, Locke is there and he doesn't agree with Jack. And I just don't think it like they executed it as well as they thought they would.
Like
it would have been cool if they came and got Kate.
Sure.
Like the others, because they know like
remember Cindy?
Yeah, Sawyer has that line where it's like when they took Cindy like a, you know, 100 yards from our camp or whatever, like they have the capability of doing that, and that would have been just as good a reversal without that Kate having to. I mean, the Jack yelling at Kate makes sense to me from a story standpoint, because Jack's an asshole and like needs to panic to run into the jungle every once in a while thinking about, you know, his wife and his father. But it's like the after thing where they both have to like apologize and the show twists it so that Kate's like obviously in the wrong, when it's like it's completely believable that she wouldn't want to be left out, and that makes you question why she was left out in the first place. And it almost seems like... I don't have a problem with them using Kate as a damsel for those particular three people, because it kind of makes sense.
The standoff is good.
But in terms of like, oh, Kate was just trying to catch up and, you know, hurried too fast and got snatched by the others, is a devaluing of Kate that I don't think the show could have written around.
It also feels kind of like a subtle jab, where Kate, part of Kate's argument is like, I can track just as well as anybody. And then Jack's like, I don't care. I can't remember exactly. He's like, I don't care about that, or it doesn't matter, or whatever. You need to stay here. But then the fact that she's the one that gets caught is like the show being like, see,
Exactly.
We told you.
And
Jack,
I mean,
Jack should be apologized to.
Right. Jack was totally right.
Right. And I can't believe that Jack has like no good reason to tell her to stay behind, but like everyone sort of acquiesces. Whereas Sawyer's like, I'm coming. Jack's like, you're literally recovering from death. And he's like, and Sawyer's just like, oh, I got to quit for this right in my back pocket. Good thing I'm traveling with my doctor. And then he gets to go. And I'm like, what? That works, right. But and Kate has to stay behind? Okay.
It's also a problem that Kate seems to solve very quickly and easily by just like being Hurley, Charlie, can you guys hang out in the hatch for a little bit?
Uh-huh.
Hurley knows the numbers.
Yeah, sure does.
Very well. yeah, so outside of weirdness, we have this trek that's sort of connected to Jack cheating on his wife, because Jack just needs to follow that drive and fix whatever problems presented to him. Which also leads us to, you know, our first, I think, like, meaningful exchange with the others that is not, you know, about snatching Walt. We have the line of demarcation, the line, which again is like alluded to somewhat in Jack's flashback when Christian's talking about the cheating line, being like, there's a line, you know where it is, you know, if you get close to it. But then by the time it pays off in the episode, feels a little disjointed. So I see where it's coming, but I'm mostly just happy to have some rules established. It feels a little bit like Whiplash to go from first full monster to back to the others. But that's season two. It's got a button, it's got some others, it's got a monster. And it's got to throw all of them into a blender. I just kind of wish we were starting to interweave those a little bit more than we are. But instead we have adversaries. There's a lot of them. They have torches. And there's a demarcation north of the beach that now they can't go across. And they probably have Michael. Or they shot Michael. We don't really know.
Or Michael literally vanished in the middle of the jungle.
Do you want to?
Stranger things have happened.
Do you want to tell us, Dave, what we should be calling this character?
Yes,
Beardy McBeardface.
Beardy McBeardface. That comes from our official podcast check-in. They had at this point an official Lost podcast with Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, and they say the hunting party was an episode that set up the others as a more significant force of opposition than we might have previously thought. I think it is an episode that we put together that was really kind of a precursor for, in many ways, where the show was going to go this year without giving away too much. I think that the episode does key up the conflict with them and the revelation of the man in the woods who we refer to as, and then Damon Lindelof chimes in and says, Mr. Friendly. And Carlton Cuse says, Mr. Friendly. So the name is Mr. Friendly, because he's friendly. But then they also say that's not his real name. That's how they refer to him internally, because he's just so friendly.
So Mr. Friendly, played by MC Gainey, who we've seen before, and is back
who
again.
Who sadly had to take the boy.
Had to take the boy.
he's like, the thing about MC Gainey and his line readings is they're just so iconic. Like, you know, the thing is we're going to have to take the boy is so good, but also light him up. I don't know what, like.
Yeah, he showed up every day he was on the Lost set and is like, I'm taking this one home with me. I'm stealing this whole thing.
Cause I was watching this episode, I've watched it a couple times in my various rewatches while we're doing this thing, but like, you know, I was watching it earlier today and I was like, I got so excited. I was like, he's about to say, gonna say, light him up. And then they do. They light them up. It's very exciting. So,
and it's very intimidating.
It's a great scene. The stuff and like that he knows everyone's names is so creepy and good. So yeah, I
the whole, when you go over to a man's house for the first time speech.
Yeah. It's great.
So he says somebody a whole lot smarter than anyone here once said, since the dawn of our species, man has been blessed with curiosity. Joanna, do you know who said that?
Was it John Locke?
It was not. Mm. Neil, do you know who said that?
Are you Googling it?
No. Was it
Googling it?
Was
might
it
not
okay,
help.
Here, but is it someone whose name is used in Lost? Like, is it like a famous philosopher whose name also like so There's more than just John Locke.
Man, I wish the show was this smart at this time period. Oh. But remember, this is season two of Lost. And what does season two of Lost like to do? It likes to create crazy mysteries.
Is it Nietzsche?
The first half of this quote is from...
Oh my God.
Alvar Hanzo in his 1967 address to the United Nations Security Council is shown on the Hanzo Foundation website, which was released in season two, thehanzofoundation.org. It's a fictional character that they created for that quote.
Do our commies know who Alvar Hanzo is?
We did mention the Hanzo Foundation website on the official podcast check-in and said that we should start checking it out.
In the first orientation video, they thank him.
That's right. That's right. Okay. And then the second thing he says about Curiosity is about how Curiosity killed the cat, right? But
correct.
Curiosity killed the cat. What?
You think he was doing a pun?
I do. I definitely think Mr. Friendly would do that. You know what they say, the other thing they say about Curiosity, don't you, Jack? I love Mr. Friendly. He's so great.
He's just trying to be friendly and also very intimidating.
He's so scary. I love him. Yeah, this other stuff is so good. Like, Jack is frustrating in this episode. On and off. I don't mind the off-island stuff, because that's just like... And like I said, what I appreciate about the off-island thing is, like, the off-island story is so boring and predictable until that Sarah twist. And then I'm like, okay, you got me. I like it.
Right, because it's like you're going through that episode, and we all know at this point that Jack is no longer married.
Right.
So it's like, oh, are they going to... So is this going to be like... You know, like at this point, we still haven't found out all the things behind everybody's things, you know? But they answer this question like really quickly. What feels like really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens pretty quickly. Absolutely. And, you're like, is it going to be this dumb and obvious that Jack is going to like have sex with an Italian lady? P.S. Who do you think that, lady, Gabriella Busoni, who do you think she looks like?
Like a Kardashian? I mean, that's a 2020 answer. Who did she look like at the time?
No, like character wise on the show.
Oh. Oh,
she looks like a character?
I mean, she kind of looks like, I mean, she has dark hair like Kate. Who does she look like?
I think she looks like Jack's mom. That's what I think.
Oh, shit.
I didn't even think about that because when was the last time I thought about Jack's mom?
Yeah, exactly. But I think she looks like Jack's mom. I mean, younger, obviously, but I think she looks like Jack's mom. She looks a little like Kate if you've had a brain injury, I suppose. But, she looks more like I said,
she has dark hair.
She looks more
like... I was going to be like a Play-Doh Terry Hatcher.
she looks more like Kate than... Sarah looks like Kate. So, you know, if you'd be like, oh, Jack's entering his brunette phase, I suppose.
On the sliding scale of Kateness.
Yeah.
What's her name in this?
Gabriella Busoni. Anyway, so.
I'm looking up pictures of them next to each other with the mother character because I don't remember what Jack's mom looks like. Okay.
See what I mean?
Yep, I see.
I mean, that works. That works in a creepy Jack way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jack does seem like he's just gonna have all kinds of parental issues with everybody. So
yeah, and you know, of course, she's like upset about her dad, and he's like, "Dad issues. I have those too.
Dad issues. Let's make out in a parking lot.
My mom has dad issues, and I could kiss it."
I'm so creeped out by the way you just said it. It's fantastic. Okay.
Well, I'm in character as Jack.
Yeah, I know.
occasionally doesn't think about people as people because he's blinded by his sadness. I don't know. I wish this episode would have presented one or more occasions for Jack to be wrong because, like, the way episode ends with like the apology that he and Kate saying they're both sorry, which is dumb, kind of like comes back like she should have stayed back where I told you, but like the the surprise of the flashback very definitively says Jack is always trying to fix something he can't fix. I kind of wish I'm going to take it all back, because I think the end of the episode, his last line, plays as, like, so incredibly dumb that it does show him to be, like, just emotionally wrong for the entire episode. So maybe it is a really slow build, where we're supposed to be like, when am I going to get on Jack's side here? And the twist of the episode is you're not going to get on Jack's side here.
Is that Sarah is leaving him?
Is it Sarah is leaving him?
It's that, you know, maybe Jack sucks sometimes.
No, it's funny because I'm curious how you read that. Kate says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Right? That's how she says it. She's a little pissed that she has to apologize. She goes, I'm sorry. Like, stop walking so fast. I'm sorry. And he goes, yeah, I'm sorry too. And like, my interpretation of that, I'm sorry, is, yeah, I'm sorry you didn't listen to me and you traipsed off into the jungle. But it seems like your interpretation is Jack saying, like, yeah, I'm sorry too. I shouldn't have, like, told you to stay behind in the first place.
No. I think he's saying, I'm sorry you kissed me. I'm sorry you kissed me.
Wow. Jack.
No, I think he's an asshole, yeah. But like, that's what I'm saying, is that the episode spends a long time stringing us along that we're eventually going to be on Jack's side, because usually when Jack runs off into the forest, we learn something sad about Jack, and this one we definitely do, but because the Sarah twist is played the way it is, maybe the rest of the episode after that flashback, you're not on Jack's side, you're just watching him like try to fix things, the problems that he's causing, and like making it all worse. Maybe that the Sarah thing isn't just a twist in the flashback, it's a flip in the episode of how we're supposed to be viewing Jack. Like, his big plan didn't work, and he's becoming as angry as he didn't want Sawyer to be, and now they're like coming out for revenge.
Now he's building an army.
Building an army.
Which is a totally chill thing to say. To anyone in your life.
I was happy to see that Ana Lucia has been hanging out with Vincent and feeding him fruit. That answered one of my calm questions from last week.
Gotta start somewhere after you come to town having killed someone everyone seems to have really liked.
Exactly. Start with the dog. Apparently there's a error or an audio blooper in the episode where Jack tells Ana Lucia, I see you made a new friend, and Ana replies, progress, and apparently someone in the background says, not really.
Who do you think that was?
Boom operator? I have no idea.
I think it was Saeed. Not really.
Not really. Oh, in character. Yes.
Yeah. Why is, speaking of Saeed, why is he in this episode again?
I do like that though. Cause like, what happens is he walks up and he's like, what do you mean everyone? Like, I'm hot. I know how to carry a gun and track. Why was I left behind? But Hurley's like, yeah, everyone, you know, like, Locke and, you know, Jack and Sawyer. Oh, and Kate. And so we get that reveal that Kate has gone, even though we could have like, probably figured it out by the fact that she's not in the hatch before we get the reveal of Kate out in the jungle, and that provides a little nice tension, because you're like, maybe Kate's gonna show up and say, oh no, she's been captured.
Kid been captured.
Damn it. But I like that. I mean, it didn't have to be like, it could, that could have been Hurley asking Charlie to help him in the hatch. And then Charlie's like, why are we on duty again? And he's like, oh, yeah. Everyone's gone, these people. So maybe.
It's funny because they do this sometimes where it's like a character who's just not really involved in the episode. They're like, we need to check in on him so that everybody knows he didn't just walk off. So that's Saeed's role this week.
I think this week is like the writer's room being like, okay, we're in season two now. You remember your main characters? Cause it really just is like, hey, you know, like, everybody, these are your main characters, these are your season one characters, the tailies have been folded in, we're back to like our main core group after taking like a little detour into Ana Lucia and Echo and saying goodbye to Shannon.
Now it's time to ensure that, as Jack said last week, nobody has forgotten about Walt.
That's right, nobody has forgotten about, which leads us to our second quote from the official podcast from Carlson Cuse. This episode really sets in motion the storyline that a lot of people have been waiting for, which is that we need to get Walt back. There needs to be an effort to get Walt back, and I know that in some cases there's frustration on the part of the audience that certain questions are left dangling on the show, but we also have, in the course of the season, we also will, in the course of the season, endeavor to answer other questions. Clearly, the Walt story is something which will be resolved this season, and you will get your answers about what happened to Walt. This podcast aired before the rest of the season, season two did. So who knows if that sorts out or not, but at this point, they want you, the audience, to think, that they have left some dangling questions about, the monster and whatnot, but, we are going to refocus a little bit on Walt, supposedly.
Can we talk about Charlie and Hurley?
We can.
How many hours, conservatively, do you think Hurley has spent listening to Charlie talk about Claire?
Oh.
We are 50 days on this island, 2 months.
Right? I don't know if I could do hours, but I could do like a percentage of their conversations.
Yeah, a percentage of their conversations.
I think of the things that Charlie says to Hurley, 85% of it is talking about Claire and 15% is being unreasonably incredulous about Hurley being a millionaire.
Right.
Being like, I don't believe you. Why are you just making stuff up now? Claire did something.
So remember how Hurley decides to spend like literally one exact minute of his existence pondering something about himself, which is whether or not he has a shot with Libby? And do you remember how Charlie responds? Do you think Claire misses me yet? Charlie, be a better friend. Thanks.
Yeah, and then Hurley's like, it hasn't even been a day.
I know. But I'm just like, I would have been like, I would like Hurley to be like, dude, can we talk about me for literally a minute? Thanks, Charlie.
Yeah. As much as I like when the show uses another character to dunk on Charlie, it's just too much. Let's talk about Hurley's feelings for once.
Let's talk about Hurley.
I mean, I'm excited to see Hurley shoot a shot with Libby. Libby's my favorite Taylor.
Also, Charlie should be, I'm not saying he needs to make a move on Libby, but he should talk to Libby because she's like a psychologist.
I know.
She could help him with his recovery.
When I was reading Chris's email about addiction recovery, I'm like, oh, Charlie.
Man, if there were only someone he could talk to.
He's a big book and appointment with Libby. Jeez. Libby should definitely start holding office hours. In her tarp. Welcome to my tarp.
You guys have so many tarps on this kind of this side. Were those like the tarps on your side of the plane?
And I can tell by the way the sun is hitting the beach that that's our hour. Thanks so much for coming. I'll see you next week, rugby shirt girl. Yeah, because they could all use some help from Libby, I think, at this point. All right. So, and then also we should talk about Sada and Jin and their little mini arc that they have. Which is, I don't know, I think I like it a lot.
Reestablishing some baselines in their power dynamic.
It's not just that, it's
post-raft power dynamic.
Well, now that Jin is cut.
It's not just that, I really like, you know, so like, Sun's like, no, you don't get to go. Like, I was worried about you, don't get to go. And then later, the conversation where he's like, first of all, I don't know exactly what was said in Korean, but the subtitle is, honey, I don't like it when you tell being told what to do, right? And there's just something about that construction that I like so much. Like, honey is important for that. Because if you just said, I don't like being told to do, we're back.
Don't tell me what to do.
we're either in lock or like season one Jin territory. But honey, I don't like being told what to do. And then she comes back with her reasonable, like, hey, that was my life up until we landed here, by the way. And he's like, she's like, I didn't like that either. And then instead of arguing with her, Jin just goes, I'm sure you did it, and snuggles closer. And I'm like, I know a woman wrote this episode. That was a miracle.
This is emotional growth.
This is so good. Yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's really, you know, I think one of the things, good or bad, about season two is, especially this far into season two, is there's just a lot of things happening on the island. We've had to meet a lot of new people. We've had to do a lot of new stuff. But you know, it's really good to see them just take these couple of minutes and just deliver just a killer Sun and Jin story, even though this episode otherwise has nothing to do with them, you know, other than Jin wanting to run off and be part of the gang.
Jin wants to go with after Michael, and he doesn't.
Right. Right. Jin wanting to go run around in the jungle with guns is not that surprising.
Mm-hmm. Sun is like, you already did that.
Yeah, she drops the big, but I'm your wife, bro, bomb.
Yeah,
in,
which but is, also...
that's a showstopper right there.
Jin, we already saw this episode. Remember, it was you and Mr. Echo in the bushes. There was a child and a teddy. We saw this episode already. You don't go this right. time. Yeah.
Right. We need to send some of the other people.
Sun hasn't seen that episode.
No, I know. I was kidding. you don't think the fronties are watching what happened?
Hey, you guys, season one came out.
Yeah, so that all happened. I think that's all the good stuff. This is a really good Sawyer episode, I think. He doesn't have a lot to do, but everything he does quippily, like, oh, my favorite leaf, or, you know, but then he's got some real, like, emotional, like, I'm out here, you know, I'm on a mission of revenge. This is not altruism sort of stuff going on. I don't know. It's good.
I mean, I like this episode, like, overall. There were just some softer points, mostly with, you know, trying to get people in places where Jack has to look good. But like, yeah, I think we're going strong. We're almost halfway through season two. But it is, you know, it is nice to finally get back to our core group. And, I really appreciate last episode and this episode, answering some island questions without actually answering island questions. In terms of like world building and island mysteries. This is some of my, you know, favorite points of tension. Building an army is dumb, but there being a line in the middle of the jungle and very dirty looking people that could move silently through the jungle and shoot guns and have torches, all very interesting to me. I'm into it. So we will transition into the storm for spoilers after the... Nope. We have tons more stuff to do up here, don't we?
Yep.
Neil, do we have a Giacchino corner this week?
We do not. Sorry. We do not have, at least there's no new Giacchino tracks. There is score in this episode. But there is the song Fall on Me that is listened to in The Swan by Hurley and Charlie, by the Poussette Dart Band, which, based on their Wikipedia entry, this is the only thing that they're really known for. Like, this was the height of it, was when, a song off of their, I believe, 1977 album was used on Lost. So, there you go. So there's some fun facts. When that's, I, it's always good to know when things were created on, like, you know, what their real timelines are on Lost. So this is from a 1977 album that they were listening to.
And I have a new thing that says heavy-handed name corner. Someone like to step forward and claim this category.
Yes, I started this. Our Italians this week, Angelo and Gabriella Busoni, arrive on our shores of America talking of miracles and miracle workers. Angelo is obviously, Angel Gabriella Gabriel, the Gabriel Angel Gabriel. It's sort of like a very like angel names, is what we got from our Italians this week. We love our religious names on Lost, and I just wanted to start tracking them. So there you go. Angels and philosophers. That is the Lost way.
While we're there, are these our contestants for Accent Corner this week?
Yeah, we're going to do a really quick round of Accent Corner. Number one, MC Gainey, the actor playing Mr. Friendly himself. I just wondered where you feel like that actor is from. Let's start with Dave.
Oh, like New England, probably.
Okay, and...
I'm going to go somewhere in the southeastern portion of the United States. I feel like we have to get that specific with this, because he's... almost clearly American, right?
So he's American, but like I just need you to pick a state.
Like
Massachusetts.
Okay.
Let's go with like a Georgia.
Cool. He's from Mississippi. So
close.
If someone gets this, it's Neil. All right. And then our Italian. the actors are, I'm not going to tell you the actor's name. Gabriella Busoni, the actress who plays Gabriella Busoni, who has to speak both Italian and English, accented English. Where do you think that actress is from? Is she Italian? What's her deal?
New York.
Dave?
I'm going to say Jersey.
Oh, I mean, she's got that hair. I see where you guys are coming from. She's Romanian. Her stage name is Monica Dean, but her real name is Monica Barladinu, with like a lot of weird fun things over the A's. So, there you go. That is, Gabriella. Now, what about Angelo Busoni? Is this guy, Italian or not?
I'm going to say he's North American. Probably like funnily Canadian, but let's not go that far. North American, because I've seen him in something. His mind says like weird, creepy show. He's been like a guy on something else, and I don't think I saw him spoken Italian. So I'm going to say North American, not Italian.
I'm going to take the bait and say Canadian.
He is not American. But he is from Belgium.
Oh.
Yeah, twist. So Romanian.
They're like the Canadians of Europe.
Romanian and a Belgian walk into an episode of Lost.
Randomly on Hawaii on vacation.
Yeah.
End up on Lost.
Maybe you know this guy. His name is Ronald Gutman. And maybe you know him from an episode of Star Trek. I don't know. I recognize him too. He's been on a million things. So. Including an episode of Star Trek Voyager, also The West Wing. So, you know, he's been around. All right. So that's Accent Corner done and dusted.
Accent Corner, the Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award for this episode goes to Locke, who gets knocked out and has like a moaning knocked out. Like everyone's kind of worried for him, or Jack is, about him being dizzy because that's a bad knockout, bad fall for Locke this week.
Yeah, it takes, you gotta get up pretty early in the morning to sneak up on John Locke.
Yeah, sneak up on John Locke and hit him so he isn't just like out cold. But
yeah,
like,
and I'm,
moaning.
Honestly, when this episode started, I was very impressed with Michael. I was like, whoa. This escalated very quickly and Michael is doing stuff.
Remember how Locke made sure to bolt the vent from the inside or the outside?
Mm-hmm.
To be like, what's the point? I'm like, Locke, you squirrel-brained genius. what's the point of changing the combination if you can get in, if you can crawl in through the vent? Who do you think is doing that? I guess Michael might.
Kate.
Right. Yeah, Kate. That's true. She's always in vents. That's a fun fact.
And clearly from this episode, she cannot be trusted at all.
Not when you tell her to stay behind for no zero good reason.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, now I think we're done, and we're going to transition into the spoiler storm section right after this.
All right, now is the time on the podcast where we like to thank our Patreon subscribers at our small council level. That is $10 or above. They get to hang out with us. They get to be in gift exchanges. They get to watch movies with us. And most importantly, they get to have their names butchered by us as we shout them out on the podcast. So I will start with four newcomers to small council. Isabel, Hazel, Roundtree, Jones. Thank you, Tiffany Flowers, Charles Camacho, Charlotte Daly. Thank you, newcomers, so much. And then to also thank you to Sean Ambrolt, Dan Allen, Susan Flanagan, Christina Brogius, Rachel Fisher Bramble, Monty Cross, Susan Kustush, Danielle Shepherd, Spencer Howard, Susan P., Nick Mendoza, Elizabeth Stelner, Ainsley Clark, Shayna Drake Kelleher, Avindal and Rebecca. Thank you all so much.
And I'd like to thank Nicole Capus, Tony Livingston, Fahim Ibrahim, Lauren Galbraith, Ali Koreka. No, that's not right. Yeah, never mind. Ali Koreka, Ryan Cassas, Saniva Agard, Phoebo Trolio, Jessica Parton, Christopher Mack, Paul, Jennifer Carnavale, Alejandra Pozos, Sarah Finnemore, Melanie Shu, Nikki Hyde, Damon Van Buren, Michelle, Nathan Miller, and Josh. Thank you very much.
And finally, I would like to thank the following folks. Kat Reeves, Cheryl Nelson, Mary Henderson, Amaro Luz. All right. Vanessa Marshall, Seth Freilich, Corinne Ball, Jessica Scott, Matthew Wilson, Sarah Cooper, Jeff Libby, Amy Harper, Brian, Kat, Matthew Munden, Mark Rodriguez, Jessica Trowbridge, Jay Forness, Patrick Grattan, and Riley Pratt. Thank you all very much.
We're back for the storm. Where do we want to start this week on the storm? Neil, you have a nice little bullet point here about Michael that might be a great place to start.
Yes, according to the Lostpedia, which is where we get so many fun facts, and it's really only recommended as a visit for people in the storm. This is the last time Michael appears, the character Michael, for 8 episodes. So we have 8 Michael-less episodes while they try to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yep, and at the I think the official podcast interview is with Harold Perrineau, and they're like, "So where's Michael going?" And he's like, "North. That's all I know." And I don't think he's lying at that point. It is interesting to see that they do a lot of James Ford callback here, both like linking to the name Sawyer and Locke, which is interesting, but also because when Michael comes back, he's gonna like have the list and he doesn't know that about Sawyer.
Oh, that's right.
So a whole bunch of stuff is getting planted, and I didn't jump ahead in the rewatch, but I did jump ahead in the Lostpedia to 3 minutes, which is the episode where we get the Michael side of all of this, because I got curious. I was like, where are those other shots coming from? How many people are in the thing? Why is Alex a man? All those sorts of things got me curious to look back. So he gets taken because he stumbles out after Computer Walt, who is probably not Walt, according to what we discussed last week, even though in my heart I think maybe the first time it could have been Walt. And maybe I need to argue it was still Walt here. Maybe I need to hold on to that. We'll see. Tells him to, head towards a rock formation by where they're keeping him, and he heads north, but before he could get to said rock formation, he happens across another peeing. And, that sets off the gunfight, and then he's boloed, and then he's actually held captive and, next to, Kate with a bag over her head, but is threatened not to speak, and so he gets to watch the whole showdown, and therefore we get to watch the whole showdown from like off to the side. And when Tom, Mr. Friendly, calls for Alex, Alex, the actual Alex that we know, sends another dude out. So that's a misdirect that's built into the hunting party. All stuff is cool, but like the Oliver Hanzo quote and Geronimo Jackson, we're definitely in the time period of Lost where they're kind of having too much fun creating mysteries, with no, solution in sight, I don't think. Or they're just, really high on their ability to chain mysteries. Like, we know now why Jack isn't married anymore, but it's kind of, left open as to, if we're ever gonna return back to who Sarah cheated on him with, or any of these other things at this point. So it's, opening a door to another Jack thing while closing off the one question we thought we had. They sort of do the same thing with the others. It's interesting, but knowing what we know about all 6 seasons of Lost feels a little bit like treading water, except for the establishment of the line, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah.
Good.
I mean, I feel like the establishment of the line, the reestablishment of the others as a force that, because we have gone through a couple of episodes of not necessarily distraction, just other things. And so, establishing the others, giving us a taste of the others, I guess. And then, yeah, I mean, there's stuff in this episode, Angelo having the same tumor that eventually Ben has, mm-hmm. Right in the same spot sort of thing. There's a lot of seeds being planted. And I just think you're right in the sense that they were probably a little high on their own supply in season 2. Like, I can't even imagine the feeling of creating season one of Lost and then like having to go and like follow that up, you know, even at the time people knew that season one of Lost was like really good, you know, like it was an immediate and fairly big success. So yeah, they probably were a little higher on their own supply, as the old saying goes.
Do you think
I'm surprised? Go ahead, Joanna.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I guess I'm just, I'm a little surprised that, it sort of feels like some of these flashbacks, like with Echoes working so well, like we know, and with the first season working so well, now they're starting to like, you know, come back to, you know, do flashbacks of characters that we've spent a lot of time flashing back in the first season. I think we have Charlie next week, so we're back in that territory. It's interesting to me on this rewatch to see how much the flashbacks are shaped by what's happening on the island and how much the flashbacks are actually addressing something that I want to know happened. I think this episode actually works because, as we discussed in the calm section, you know, it has the typically boring, Jack's going to cheat on his wife, red flags, leading up to the Sarah thing, which I think is nice. But when we come back to stuff with like Charlie next week, I feel like a lot of the flashbacks start to suffer in trying to service the mystery machine on the island, until eventually, you know, it builds to, 3 minutes, which is right towards the end of the season, which our flashback is still on the island. It Ouroboroses and eats its own tail completely, by the end of the second season. But I don't know. I guess I'm just starting to realize we're on the tipping point of that. Last week we ranked seasons. And it was hard for me to put my season two somewhere because, you know, we were right in the middle of it. But I'm starting to remember a lot of things you guys brought up last week, because I could feel them right on the edge. Right on the edge. Because I want to know what's happened to Michael now. And I had to look ahead like 12 episodes.
Yeah, I was going to say, there is a period of this season, and I think we're definitely in it now, where, you know, it feels like at a certain point, the flashbacks get a little tired. Like, you can only do the flashback thing for so long. And it's not like right now, but you start to see that ramp up. And eventually that's why, you know, you get into time travels and flash sidewayses and all the other stuff, because I don't think it was really reasonable to think that they could keep that format. And it probably would have made a more boring show if they would have kept the flashback thing the whole way. So I think there are moments where you can see it sort of wearing thin, like they don't, like you said, they don't connect it perfectly, and so it's like it's a little extra.
Joanna, did you want to spend more time in the jungle this week
with the others,
or just less time with Tumor Jack and his father saying a lot of things they've said to each other before?
Yeah, I mean, the Italians were unnecessary, and it's interesting that you're like, Angelo and Ben have their tumors in the same place, and that to you seems like a seed planted, whereas to me, I mean, especially since they don't know.
Yeah, maybe not so much a seed, but like a thing they come back to later.
Yeah, I guess that's a clever thing to do, is like take a thing and make it seem more significant by repeating it later or something like that. Whereas I'm like, didn't you already do that? Or like whatever. But there's also, the question of, no, I don't know what I was going to say. Actually, I have no idea. Yeah, I did want to spend more time, in the jungle. I love all the Mr. Friendly stuff, as I've mentioned. Oh yeah. My other question was, do you feel like Alex not coming out and Pickett coming out instead? That's a character that we will see a lot of before he dies, Pickett. Do you feel like that was a misdirect, or do you feel like that's a retcon? Like, do you feel like they'd already cast Alex when they sent him out, or they were just like, we don't have her yet, so we can't use her here, so let's do something else? Do you know?
That kind of makes
sense.
That's
a good question, because we don't even know if they know Alex is a girl.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So
they could have intended that to be Alex. I guess the question is, because at the end of Hunting Party, do they know what happened to Michael? That would answer that question in my mind, because like they thought out the campfire sequence to a certain degree, but do they know at this point that Michael's over there and that there's an Alex switch or anything like that?
Right. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Or
I mean,
what Harold Pernow said on the podcast, it just nobody knew. Nobody knew.
Because okay, so there was all of this part of the behind the scenes thing that like the actor who plays Walt had a huge growth spurt, and that's why they couldn't bring him back right away. Like, did they ever intend to bring Walt back and Michael back faster than they did? Is the question that I'm asking out loud. Hopefully someone knows.
I mean, we don't have the answer to that.
Because it's unique that Michael's gone for 8 episodes. And so it's like, did they know that he was going to be gone that long? And then if so, that's an interesting thing to do. And then that goes to the question of like, did they know? The casting thing makes sense to me though with Alex, because they probably didn't have that role cast.
I think
super
it's
early.
At some point in season 2, here's an assumption, if you guys listening, because a lot of you listening know Lost way better than we do, if you're listening and you know the answer to this and want to send us an email, please make it a nice one and not an angry one. But here's what I will say. When interviewing Stephen Williams, both for this podcast and when talking to him about Watchmen, like, he talked about being like actual real life friends with Harold Pernow and how he has like, that it's morally for him as like, a black man working in the TV industry.
Mm-hmm.
He had some moral conflicts over what happened to the character of Michael in terms of being sidelined, backburnered, written out of the show, basically. Mm-hmm. And so my guess would be in this season, Walt is gone because the actor's too tall. And at first they thought
too tall.
At first they're like, okay, maybe we'll make him like creepy and he'll show up in weird dream sequences and that'll be a good way to like use everything. But then I think what they've said, and I think Javi said it to us when we were interviewing him, is just sort of like, we don't know what to do this with this character without Walt. And he is a casualty of this other thing that we didn't anticipate, which is this kid mm-hmm. growing faster than
because it's also
imagine.
It would be unreasonable for Michael's character for him to forget about Walt.
Right. So he can't
so, like,
just,
you
like,
can't have Michael without him constantly needing to find Walt.
Right. Michael can't be like, you know, helping Libby with her tarps or whatever, you know, he can't be doing basic island stuff when there's this question out there. You remove this man's son, and then, like, you know, either he's looking for Walt the rest of the time. I mean, there are things they could have done. I think we've discussed this before, like, what if Michael had joined the others? Like, I think that could have been a cool use of Harold Pernow. Like, there's like mm-hmm. there are things maybe they could have done that they just did not do. And my guess would be they really realized this in season 2, where they're trying to write these episodes with Michael without Walt, and they're like, this is just not working. All right, let's press pause on trying to solve this problem. And he's going to go out to look for Walt, and we don't know how that's going to end, but we'll figure it out. And then they just don't. They're like, well, he comes back and he kills 2 women, and then he drives off the island. That's the solution we figured out. You know what I mean? But I think that this 8 episode, him vanishing, my guess would be, is them being like, all right, let's buy ourselves some time to try to figure this Michael problem out. And then fundamentally, they don't really figure it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they just
You know, this is what happens to Walt. The fact that Walt disappears and then Michael disappears after him, and the fact that they're gone for so long was a huge deal at the time that Lost was airing. Like, it felt weird. Like, it felt weird the whole time. It's like, wait, where's Walt? Like, why? And, you know, it was, I think it was kind of obvious because we do see him much taller in Shannon's vision, but it was an interesting corner they wrote themselves into, and like you said, one that they never really found their way out of.
He just could have magically grown.
Sure.
It's an island of mystery.
I mean, it's weird because I guess
that's jumping through time. I mean, they don't know that yet.
Looking back on it, there's like a million things they could have probably done.
I really wish someone suggested that, I forget when it was. It was probably one of you guys or maybe one of our guests suggested, like, yeah, they should have just had Walt like hop through time somehow and then like come
electromagnetic time traveling Walt.
Well, then just like show up with like an adult, you know, a grown up actor playing Walt, and he's like, I'm your son. Heck, you know, if the Flash can do
horse.
All right, let's talk about Walt in a couple emails we got. This one's from Jeff, and he says the title of the email. Jeff, longtime listener. Thanks, Jeff, for being such a great listener for like years and years and years and years. Anyway, the title of his email is Walt/Michael AIM. Hello, everyone. In regards to the debate over if it's truly Walt AIMing with Michael or the others, couldn't it be both? Perhaps the others are letting Walt get away with thinking he's being sneaky and using their computers to communicate for help, when in actuality they're hoping he'll lure some losses to them. Just an idea that could bring an end to the hostilities. Love the podcast. So that's Jeff's take. But then we get this email from Blake titled Ewalt. Hi guys, you were talking about if Walt was using his powers to chat with Michael on the Swan computer. And yeah, that's a fun idea, but I did a bit of Lostpedia digging about it. In season 3's expose, we get a flashback with Paolo in the Pearl Station, the one with the camera feeds on the Swan. He overhears Ben telling Juliet his plan to get Jack to do his spinal surgery by using Michael to bring Jack, Kate, and Sawyer to them, and then exploiting Jack's emotional investment in Kate. And that flashback is timestamped day 49, the same day when Michael first chats on the computer in What Kate Did. So yeah, occasionally we do get answers in the show. Glad to hear all the season 3 love. I think it's my fave. And I'm thinking Neil will come around on season 5.
Wow. You know why I forgot about that?
Why?
Because at one point I think I purged all the Nikki and Paolo episodes. So if it's in there, it's hidden to me.
It's in Exposé. I like Exposé as an episode. We'll get there.
Yeah, there's some good ones that involve Nikki and Paolo.
Exposé is their episode. I think it's a good episode.
Oh, that's God.
We'll talk about it when we get there. But yeah, so Dave, are you buying it? What do you feel like?
I like that retcon. But I also, like, in terms of things that are contained in season 2, I like the first email.
What if, here we go, what if Ben went to Jacob and was like, Jacob, I need your help. And Jacob was like, all right, I'm going to enhance Walt's power so that he's electromagnetic now.
Sure. sure. Yeah.
Close
so,
enough.
Why not? Okay. So a few other things. This is interesting. The Locke and Sawyer name thing. I think we read early on that people from like the beginning had been theorizing that the con artist who ruined Sawyer's life was also Locke's dad. Like that was a very early theory on the fuselage message board.
Just because we've only met so many con artists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like it started after we met and it sort of discovered that Locke's dad is a con artist. People were like, oh,
right.
Who else is a con artist?
Right. And I feel, and since like, you know, Desmond shows up on the, you know, like, let's look for all the connections we can find and stuff like that. So the fact that Locke brings up, you know, like, where'd you decide to get that name in this episode? I mean, this is obviously like a long plant for the man from Tallahassee, right? But like, doesn't Locke at some point, cause there's a lot of Locke flashback episodes with his dad. I think there's 3 total, I want to say. Maybe 4. Doesn't he at some point find out that his dad is using Sawyer as a name?
I know that doesn't he piece it together?
Well, he gets a file. He gets a file on Sawyer. Mm-hmm. Like, Richard gives him the file and that's how he knows for certain his dad's connection to Sawyer. But like, I feel like if he's asking Sawyer about like, why'd you decide to use that name here? And then we see in a flat. I'm just going to plant the seed. Let us look for Locke hearing. Cause you know, there's that episode where like his dad asks him to basically like, be involved in a con for him. And that's how he loses Helen and all sort of stuff like that. And there's money involved.
Mm-hmm.
And, at some point, I believe the authorities talk to him and tell him like all the cons that his like dad has done. I'm just saying let's either one of our listeners can write in right now. Maybe you're already huffily mid email. I like the huffy emails. It's fine. Send us a huffy email.
Wait. The next Locke episode is Lockdown, which the flashback involves him finding out that his father faked his own death.
Right.
So that might be where it is.
Yeah.
It might be coming.
It might be soon. Might be very soon.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He definitely learns that his dad's not cool in the next one.
More so.
Super not chill.
Super not chill. not just shady about Oregon dealings, but shady in all.
Literally faking his own damn death.
And I mean, and even, I will say, like, to zoom back to Walt really quickly, like, even if, they didn't quite know what they were going to do yet with Michael and Walt, which I kind of feel like if around episode 11 in a season, they might not know how they're going to wrap up the season. That seems pretty reasonable. They are having fun playing, you know, like to have Mr. Friendly be like, he's a very special boy. And everyone at home is like, type, theory, you know, like that's some good theory baiting right
yeah.
there.
So, I mean, you know. And that's true too, is like Walt was a particular fascination and, it's hard to know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. I guess it just depends on how you feel about Michael being sort of saddled or like sidelined because of this, because, Walt was fun to theorize about back in the day too.
Still is. I'm having fun. Can't you hear how much fun I'm having in the computer?
So let's do the Walt antagonist check-in.
Yeah, I don't think I have a lot for Locke antagonist check-in. He's sort of just as curious as everybody else, and I don't think there's a ton of Man in Black influence here, although we did get the candidate name drop.
Yeah. Tell me, not a candidate. Well, quick question. Mm-hmm. This is actually my favorite kind of Locke, which is, oh, I fucked up Locke, right? Because Jack's like shooting practice, and Locke's like, shooting practice. I really thought I had this situation handled.
He was really sad, and Jack's like, no, I did the whole chair turnaround sit down. He said he was fine.
I told him we weren't going to forget about Walt.
What's that? What's the movie quote? I was wrong. What is that from? Never mind. Anyway, that's what I think of when I think of, you know, Locke being like, I was wrong.
It is. It also does show a little bit of like character change or character evolution for John Locke because, you know, pre-hatch John Locke is all about running into the jungle to track something or find something or figure out what mysteries. But we see him in this. He's a little more, I don't want to say relaxed about the whole situation. But he seems less interested in the others than, he would have been if the hatch didn't exist. Cause he's really into the hatch now. It's just a thought.
The hatch is important.
Yeah.
He's got to press the God button.
It's interesting to see John, like, because he's sort of like the let Michael go guy, you know, at a certain point. Because, you know, the hatch is where the party's at.
Hatch is where the party's
at. The real hunting party is in the hatch.
I just don't, like, honestly, if I'm on that island, all I'm doing is sitting in the hatch playing records and taking showers.
I'll take every shift. I'll sleep 40 minutes at a time.
Uh-huh. I'm just like taking naps, playing records, taking showers, eating cereal. That is my island lifestyle. I am an indoor cat. That is my preference. Thank you.
Maybe that's what it is, because that's all we've really seen John do, like through most of the season. This is the first time he's been outside the hatch.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Well, he worked so hard to get in, you know?
Right. Right.
His shoes off the first time he went into somebody else's house.
If I were him.
John Locke took his shoes off going in the hatch.
If I were him, I'd be like, I really need this to have been worth kind of killing Boone over. So, let's make it worth it. Listen, Joannas should stay in hatches. They should not go for swims on beaches. They should just hang out in hatches. That's what Joannas should do. So.
Joannas in hatches. So to answer a question from earlier, Ronald Gutman, does look familiar from Star Trek, but the thing I most recently saw him in and the creepy thing that came into my mind is he plays the older vampire Dennis in season 3 of Preacher.
It's true. He was
so
in,
that
like,
was where that came from.
10 episodes of Preacher, right? Something like that.
I saw most of Preacher.
I remember Preacher.
Not all of Preacher, but yeah, we did see enough of Preacher to do a podcast episode about it way back when, but I continued past then. I don't think I continued past season 3, though. It got really weird. All right. Neil, where are we going next week?
Well, as I think we mentioned earlier in the storm, at the very least, we have a Charlie episode. This is fire plus water, not fire and water, fire plus water.
Yeah,
and it's a Charlie episode.
These next two episodes are a real tough time for Charlie.
Yeah, we'll have a good old time.
Mm-hmm. So until then, we're probably going to end up building a church at the end of it. Where can people find more of your work online? Let's start this week with Joanna Robinson.
Oh, you can find me on vanityfair.com. You follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. I will be at the Oscars this weekend inside the theater with all the fancy people. Oh, my God. Anyway, so I might be tweeting or something about that.
I might be tweeting that.
I might.
Neil, where can people find your work online?
Well, this weekend you can definitely find me tweeting from my couch watching the Oscars via at Rejects or at One Perfect Shot. Get your Oscar week. We're actually at Film School Rejects. We're not really doing a ton of Oscar week stuff because the nominations are so bad this year that it's like, why does this even matter? It's very depressing when we talk about the Oscars in our team Slack. So I'm just going to tweet jokes about it.
I don't know. Parasite could win. That's for sure. Who knows?
Listen, I'm happy to be surprised, but not expecting to be surprised.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where this week we talked about things Oscar related, like Joanna was talking about, maybe Parasite could win. We also talked about Sundance movies. And next week, we will be talking about whatever happens at the Oscars. Maybe a Parasite win, or maybe we'll just take that as an occasion for me to tell everybody once again why Joker is a bad movie. And just, really nail that home with inarguable points like I do on that podcast. This podcast, though, I need to keep you on the island of mystery and remind you that falling down is very dangerous. So don't fall down. Stay upright. We'll see you next week.
It's like Joker is the falling down of Oscar movies.
Joker is the falling down of Oscar movies.
All the way down those stupid stairs.